right, here we go. Big show this week. Hey, friends, this is Larry Herb, Xbox Live's Major Nelson. You have downloaded show number 179. I'm recording this on Sunday, June 18, 2006, up here in the northwest of the United States of America near Seattle, Washington. Again, thanks for downloading the show. I've got, as you can tell from the size of the download and probably on your device or on your computer, you're looking at the time of the total time of the show and you're going, wow, that's a long one, Major. Well, yeah, it is. I'll explain why later on. But I want to go through some of the headlines this week, and then we'll jump right into the three interviews. I have three big interviews. But first of all, the back compat update went live last week. So for those of you that have been paying attention to the backwards compatibility story, and of course I had Peter Moore on last week who reaffirmed our dedication to the backwards compatibility cause. And so the backwards compatibility update went out. I guess that was that Tuesday? I guess that was Tuesday. All the days are kind of running together for me. So that went out on Tuesday with some couple of nice titles on there. And of course, it's never enough. You know, everybody always wants their favorite title on there. And rest assured, the backwards compatibility team is working through them and doing the best they can. Emulation's hard, and especially when you're emulating from one platform to another, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't need to go over that. Some folks have requested that, that I get some members of the back compat team on, and I'll see what I can do. These guys like to stay behind the scenes and just keep working on their projects there, the back compat story. So I'll see if I can get some of those folks on, though. I will see what I can do there. The other thing is there was also a dashboard update, which was a very, very, very minor update. There were some issues with some Chinese characters. And so we had to fix that with a dash update. And a lot of people were asking, well, how come you didn't fix X or Y or Z, or I noticed this was wrong? Because the team was able to go in and make this Chinese character change with very limited code changes. And every time, and those of you developing software will appreciate this, every time you change something, you have to go back and do all of the testing again. And of course, the dashboard had gone through hours and hours and hours and hours of testing and so forth. And if they had cracked open too much of the code, they'd have to basically restart and go all over again. So they were able to go in, kind of make those tweaks and with minimal impact to other, minimal to no impact to other areas of the code. So that's what's going on there. All right. So also, speaking of the dashboard team actually posted, has an interesting post up. They have a blog, and they don't keep up as frequently as I do with my blog. They kind of do a lot of the speaking through me. But, Daryl, who is the test manager for the console, he posted something on their site. So I will, I'll post a link up to that up there just so you guys are aware of that. And again, they're really working on all the new content, but they really don't have time to post to their blog as frequently as they'd like. So also, there's a key sequence and a key code floating around for basically wiping out your Xbox 360, resetting the cache, and so on and so forth. So I would be very careful on using that, and I would not use that unless you are instructed to by support. I wouldn't just go willy-nilly using that because it's... unless it's being used with a trained professional support person on the phone, we can't be held responsible. So that's what I wanted to say about that. All right, let's see what else we have going on here. Let's just jump right into the three interviews. I've got three interviews this week. I think you're really going to enjoy them. The first interview I'm going to roll is with the Forza team, with Dan Greenwald and Che Chow. They're going to fill us in a little bit about what's going on with Forza 2. Of course, we showed some pieces at E3. And so I wanted to just kind of get together with those guys, and they're doing some great stuff over at ForzaMotorsport.net. And then the second interview I have is with with one of the designers from Red Storm around the brand new Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter content. And just talking about that is content that's coming out soon. Don't know the exact date or any of the pricing, but they have assured me it's coming out soon, whatever that means. And then the final interview is, as promised last week, I have somebody on from the Xbox Live Arcade team. Our good old friend Ross, who I've had on in the past, who handles the portfolio, he's going to come on, and I told him, well, you'll hear about that interview. But so without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into the Forza interview first of all. My guest today, we're going to talk about Forza 2, and I'm going to let you guys introduce yourselves. How's that sound? So we have...
Sounds great. I'm Dan Greenwald. I'm the game director with Forza Motorsport.
So Dan, thank you for joining me today, and...
I am Che Chow, and I'm the community manager at ForzaMotorsport.net.
So, Che, a lot of people will know you because you just came here from 1UP.
Yeah, I was executive editor at 1UP.com, and previous to that, I was on Xbox Nation before we folded, and then before that, I was at EGM, Electronic Gaming Monthly.
So, welcome. How long have you been here, by the way, before we can...
2.5 months.
So it's been a hell of a... Because you came here right in the middle of the E3 firestorm.
Right.
All the craziness. Right. So, right. Danny Chee, I want to talk about Forza 2. I haven't really talked about Forza 2 before, so I want to just kind of get you guys and tell us what's different. We showed some cool stuff at E3, so let's go through what we saw at E3.
What you saw at E3 was this great video. Peter Moore introduced it, and it was just really exciting. It was cool to see people's reaction to it. The video is meant to really capture the passion that the team has and the passion that the game instills in people.
Right.
So we had some great world-class cars and some really cool moments in the video where the camera flies through and sees damage or sees parts, and that was really what wowed me.
It was kind of a cool video. So the one thing, Forza the original was huge on Xbox Live.
Yeah.
Everybody really liked that. What are some of the things that the fans can expect in the next generation console? How have you guys tapped into the power of the Xbox 360?
It's a great question. It's a hell of an act to try and follow up.
I mean,
we had a game, 93 rated game. It built up this big community around it, kind of in spite of ourselves. And in a lot of ways, we're like, you know, what do you do after that?
Right.
Well, at the same time, the game really hadn't even touched the vision that I have for it. The goal of it was to capture this passion and really create more passionate car lovers. And so we hadn't really done everything yet. So what you're going to see is we're bigger in every single way. So there's more tracks, there's more cars, we now have Lamborghini, and we had Porsche before. We're now adding in the McLaren F1. So we've got these great cars. But on top of it, the MGS studios, especially in the racing side, have always innovated in the online space. When you look at Project Gotham Racing and Forza Motorsport, that same sort of piggybacking is going to continue to happen. I mean, we're partners with the Project Gotham Racing team. And it's one of those partnerships I don't think anyone can really compete with, frankly, because they came out with great features in Project Gotham Racing 2, like leaderboards for your career that were, you know, contextual. And Forza Motorsport just integrated that right in.
And kept going.
Yeah, kept going. We did an online career, and it was seamless single-player, multiplayer integration. And then PGR3 came out, and they did an online career. And they introduced the Project Gotham Racing TV, where you could spectate the greatest racers in the world, drift in their cars around these great cities. Well, that technology plugged right into Forza Motorsport, so you get Forza Motorsport TV in Forza Motorsport 2. And with the great thing about Forza Motorsport TV, of course, is it's in Forza Motorsport, which has customization.
Right.
So you're not just going to watch, you know, 8 F50 GTs or 8 McLaren F1s driving around the corner. You're going to see all these unique cars with totally unique paint jobs and customizations. You might see a Hello Kitty car or whatever going around.
Yeah, I mean, let's stop. I want to talk about that for a second, because one thing that amazed me with Forza was the level of we're getting a little static here, but that's all right. We'll keep going. The level of customization that people were able to, for lack of a better term, uncover with the ability that you guys put in the game to skin cars.
Right.
I mean, that was tell me a little bit about that and some of the stuff that you saw that your jaw must have dropped.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got to be like proud papa. I mean, it was incredible to watch. We hoped for great things out of this, and we knew we'd get a couple negative things as well.
Right.
But the goal was to put together a really, really powerful tool.
Right.
Because this isn't, you know, this is online, and we're expecting a huge community, and we have a huge community. But when you're putting together, it's like, you know, we could put these little pre-canned liveries where you pick stripe number one or stripe number two and put it in. But when I imagined that online, it started to feel very finite.
Right.
It started to feel very limited. And when you start thinking about what creative people can do with a powerful tool, it was limitless. And so very quickly after the game came out, we start seeing these websites pop up with people that are, you know, they're doing Cloud from Final Fantasy. They're doing like Lord of the Rings, or they're doing all these incredible paint jobs. They're also building rally cars, so they'll take very realistic liveries.
Right.
There are people that have created entire race leagues that have real liveries based around this. And some of the websites amaze me. The first one that I think blew me away was the Mona Lisa, and I kind of talk about that one a lot.
Right. That was so for the people that haven't seen that, explain that to the people that haven't seen it.
This is mind-boggling.
Okay.
Because I am by no means an artist.
Right.
I get in the livery editor, and I put stripes on, and I love my creation.
You have your fun.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's the type of creation only a mother could love.
Right.
And I go onto this website, and there's a whole bunch of different ones, and some are cool and some are not. And there's one of them, and on the side of the car, there's a Mona Lisa. And I was like, that had to be imported. That had to be hacked.
Right. Where did that come from?
That couldn't have been done.
Right.
And this was before anyone was really doing any of that stuff. Right. And the guy did it. He put 100 layers onto the car, He's using flesh-colored semicircle and a slightly darker flesh-colored semicircle to create very dynamic shading on the cheeks. And
right.
Captured the Mona Lisa smile and even put a slight frame around the outside of
right.
it. And really what it came down to is here's an incredibly creative artist that was given the power to express themselves as they wanted to. And in a way, you know, he made his masterpiece. That
right.
You look at it and you're just like, what, how the hell?
So I need to get that link from you so I can put it on the blog just to show the people that are listening to this.
Okay. Okay.
But so what have you guys clearly did some amazing stuff in Forza? What kind of sandbox or what kind of tools are we going to have in Forza 2? Can you tell me a little bit about that? You know, in terms
of the livery editor is getting far more powerful.
Of course.
I mean, we're doing a lot more there, and there's of course more cars, which
right.
means you have more canvases to work
right.
on. And then the final bit that really I think is the what this game has needed is a photo mode.
Right.
Now, this isn't something that's totally new to the genre. Project Gotham Racing 3 as well as Gran Turismo
right.
both have a photo mode. But no game has needed a photo mode
right.
like Forza Motorsport, because what we had were all these community sites with thousands of pictures taken from digital camera.
Yeah, pointed at a screen
yeah,
and with a big black line through the middle.
Exactly. It doesn't work out that well.
So what is photo mode?
So photo mode is the ability to, in the UI or in game.
The user interface?
Yeah, the user interface. Again, developer side here,
yeah.
right? In the user interface or in the game itself, to go in and stop the action, take a really close-up look at the car or pan out, move around the car,
right.
put different effects on the car, capture your artwork, or just capture your style. You know,
right.
if you're drifting through some corner and you've set up your car just right with, you know, the tire pressure and settings and all that and really upgraded the wings and made that car your own,
right.
you can capture a picture of it and you use it as you will.
That's kind of cool. That was really amazing to me, as we said earlier, is just what people have done with the community. So the community's mm-hmm. really taken the painting, you know, and the decals and the livery editor, as you call it, in a different direction. Tell me about some of the tweaks that you've seen with the under the hood stuff. You know, some of the stuff that you've seen that you were surprised by.
Within the first week of the game being out, people were already starting to do these, you know, trying to figure out what would be the best car to compete in. And in a lot of ways, it's the same thing that happens in the real world, like the SCCA.
Right.
That when a new car comes out, you know, some car may dominate, like the Z4 coming into autocross, and all of a sudden everybody's winning in it, and then they have to bump it up to a new class. What was really interesting to me to see was how people were doing the trial and error with the upgrades. And then they were really fine-tuning their car, like the suspension and
right.
little bits like that. What impressed me the most was a post that I saw, I think it was on Forza Central, pretty early on, where a guy went and he was looking for a really good setup for autocrossing in his S2000.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went online and he found an S2000 with a guy that had done aftermarket parts on it in the real world.
Right.
And he applied the same spring rate settings to the front and back suspension as well as the sway bar settings.
In the game.
In the game.
So he was basically copying what was going on in the real world, and he was right. tweaking it down into the, whoa.
And he really liked the way it handled and felt this is incredible.
Right.
And for me, again, as it's sort of like we release this thing out to the world,
right.
and you kind of have to sit back and take the good with the bad. And
right.
That was one of those moments where I was like, wow, we nailed it.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
So as I asked you a little bit earlier, how do you follow up? I mean, you've got more cars, you've got a better livery editor, you've got obviously more tracks, and then more importantly, as I said earlier, the power of the Xbox 360.
Well, the power enables us to do a hell of
right.
a lot of things.
Right.
So there's more cars on track,
12 right.
cars on track, and 60 frames a second with... Yeah, with HD and,
right.
and
so the cars are going to be going a lot faster than the 40-mile-an-hour demos that I've seen from some other consoles. If you know what I mean.
I'm not going to get into that.
Just got to ask. So what I'm saying is, you guys are really tapped into it and doing some really cool stuff.
Yeah, and the game's going to be beautiful. I mean, our first game was really bringing squeezing every little bit
right.
of juice out of the Xbox. And we're going to do the same thing out of the 360. So it's just going to be a gorgeous game. As far as what we follow up with, you know, for me, I read a lot of forums. I really enjoy, you know, reading what the community has to say. I play a ton of sim games. I play a lot of the games in general.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a lot easier to say, oh, well, there's this feature in this game and this feature in that game and this feature in that game. And what if you took all features from all games and just included them?
Right.
And that's interesting, but it's kind of iterative. And
yeah.
for me, as a designer and as the director of this game, the vision that I see for this product isn't doing what they're doing. Just like the vision for the first product was not to make Gran Turismo on the Xbox.
Right.
What I wanted to capture was that passion.
Right.
It was that nugget that when somebody sees a Ferrari for the first time in their life somewhere in Nebraska and they go, what
what the hell is that?
Yeah, what is that thing?
And it elicits an emotional response in them. That's what I want to use this game to do, to get more car freaks to become gamers,
right,
and to turn gamers into car freaks. So the features I'm looking at are not like, hey, this game had that feature, we should do it too.
Yeah.
I'm looking at, what can we do that is going to get more people excited?
Right.
What can we have behind door number two that people aren't expecting?
Right.
Now, meanwhile, we do have a great partnership, as I mentioned, with Bazaar. And so right. we do get some features that are kind of iterative.
But right.
they come relatively cheaply to us
sure.
because of that.
Right.
And that's fantastic. It's a great win for the community and for us. But right now, there's a lot of features I'm actually not quite talking about.
Sure, yet, of course.
That I'm personally excited about because I think they're going to bring people to the genre.
Right.
That aren't currently... It's not about stealing the players that are already playing this game or that
right.
game. It's about granting people, like I reference, my dad loves right. cars. He's got an R32, and he just has this great.
So is that where you picked up your car passion from? Let's talk about that for a second. Because obviously I'm talking to the guy right now, and there's people listening to the show saying, that guy's got my dream job.
Right.
So, I mean, how did you get where you are? Let's talk a little bit about you for a minute.
Well, you know, it's interesting because... In a lot of ways, I am sitting here because of Gran Turismo.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I was, you know, I didn't really like games that much. I right. played in the arcade. I played a lot of Street Fighter and played right. in tournaments, but I wasn't like a console gamer
right.
much. And a buddy of mine got Gran Turismo, and he got a PlayStation. And I came over, and he's like, hey, you should play this too. And I kind of liked cars, but I wasn't crazy
right.
about
them. Right, right.
And we started playing through the career together, where he's playing a bit, and then I play a bit,
right.
and he plays a bit. And I got really hooked on the game. And I got really hooked on the mastery of it. That's
right.
what got me stoked.
Right.
It was like this level, this path where you're just getting better and better and better.
Right.
And meanwhile, I was learning. And I felt like I was learning something that worked in the real world. I wasn't learning some, like, you know, that a elf has this many hit points. And, you know, I was learning.
You're no, you weren't. You weren't. It didn't really matter that you were a level 12 mage. You couldn't translate that to your real life.
Exactly. And so, anyway, I really loved that game. And after that, I ended up getting an old Toyota Corolla, and decided I wanted to do some rallycross in it. And
right.
so I tore the car down and weight reduced it and rebuilt the carburetor and did some tuning on it. It still was. It was always broken. It was
right.
a piece of junk, but I was learning.
Right.
And I knew, though, that the first car I really wanted to get was, and this is going to be funny to anyone who plays Gran Turismo, but it was a Mitsubishi 3000 GT VR4.
Okay.
Which in Gran Turismo 1 was like a supercar. It was
right.
a twin turbocharged, all-wheel drive, all-wheel steering. And I was like, this is the car I have to own.
Right.
And so when I actually had enough money that I could really start thinking about a car that would stress me out,
right.
that's the car I bought. I tuned on it, and I took it to the North End and did some street racing and really had a blast in that car. Broke it and broke it and broke it and broke it and broke it.
Did it drive like Gran Turismo?
Yes and no.
Okay.
it's a really, really heavy car.
Right.
And that actually makes it drive more like Gran Turismo.
So is there one of these in Forza?
Yeah,
there is.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And it's really fun for me to drive in Forza as well. But anyway, so that Gran Turismo ignited this passion in me
right.
for cars that has just grown and grown and grown over the years. And for me, when the opportunity came around to, so I worked on Project Gotham Racing and Rally Sport and Midtown, and I got into the games industry in a lot of ways because of my introduction to the console
sure.
with GT. But then my heart was always with cars.
Sure.
When the opportunity came around to start pitching a game that was more at the heart of simulation right. for the Xbox, for me, it wasn't about going after GT3
right.
or GT4 or GT anything. For
right.
me, it was that moment that happened to me on that couch
right.
in Gran Turismo 1. And I wanted to do that for the new generation that's a little more sophisticated.
Right.
Pep Boys has body kits now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
when I was young,
you had to make
ago,
your own.
Yeah. You stapled them on. Well, they still do it today.
And, so that's kind of cool. So you really grew up, you know, that's what you're going after with the series is really that passion, that excitement, and to broaden it out, as you said earlier.
Yeah. And get people so excited.
The really interesting part about it, as you brought it up a couple times, is the fact that, and I'm going to use a racing term, I'm not a car guy. I'm, you know, I end up, basically what happens to me when I'm racing is I hit the wall the first turn and then I'm looking at rear taillights the whole mm-hmm. race. But so what you're doing though is kind of what with PGR, you're drafting them. You know, they're going along and you're picking up some features for them and then you guys will pull ahead of them and you know, mm-hmm. when you release and then, you know, maybe they'll pick some features up for you on their next release.
Right.
Yeah, it's really interesting. That's great to share with Bazaar.
Oh, it's great. And they're such a fantastic team. The the project lead on Forza, right. Garrett Young, he worked with Bizarre for Project Gotham Racing 1 and 2,
right.
And lived over there for a while. I worked on Project Gotham Racing 1 and lived over there for 2-3 weeks.
When you say over there, you mean over in England?
Over in England.
Yeah, where they're based, sure.
And, you know, that's a great team. I learned a ton from them. And so that relationship has just continued and continued.
Right.
And though they're remote and isolated, obviously, right. over in England, you know, we still stay in touch when we both show up at E3s trying to have dinner as a team together. And,
right. But and then, so PGR 3 and 4s are really brother and sister to a certain degree.
Very much so.
Very closely tied. I want to talk to, Chi, I want to get the mic over to you. I want to talk about community. So you're working on the Forza community. Tell me some of the cool stuff we're going to see that you're seeing in the community. I mean, you're already starting to turn up the heat with some of the cool articles that you've published over on the website. So first of all, I want to give the website address out. Which is?
ForzaMotorsport.net.
Cool. And I want to talk about some of the stuff that we're going to be seeing on the website coming up and with the community.
Well, first of all, I want to address something that Dan had said earlier about the S2000. I think that was me. I think that was me. That was what I wrote in my 1UP.com review of Forza 1. Because I bought an S2000 in the game, and it was just like, you know, I always played games before they came out, so there was no help at all, right? There was no community. Because nobody was playing them. This was like during review time.
Right.
So I would I just Googled S2000 tuning, and it was like a real life spreadsheet on suspension tuning for S2000, and it was so I used those parameters, and it worked. It was like which was pretty amazing. I was like, wow, this game. And also to wonder why I'm here now. Also to build on what Dan had just said was that so the goal of Forza was to reignite the sort of passion that Gran Turismo gave him, and in that sense, I think Forza 1. I mean, I come from the same background. Gran Turismo 1 was sort of my awakening with cars. I bought my Integra GSR 8 years ago because of GT1. But I mean, maybe I didn't get into it to the degree that Dan did, and he kind of followed his career path based on that, but. For me, I felt it back then, and with Forza, I felt it again. And this time, you know, I wanted to bring some of that. I basically wanted to sort of chronicle my journey, and which is why I came to the Forza team, because I thought, well, you know what? Like, I'm not a full-time car guy. I mean, I love cars, but I'm not as knowledgeable as, like, you know, 80% of the people.
But you must have learned a lot in the past couple months.
Exactly. And in fact, I learned a lot just playing Forza to the degree that I did. And, you know, so I thought, hey, so the vision is to do a website where we combine car culture, car lust, car knowledge with, you know, games and 360. And so the editorial vibe and the tone of the website is to incorporate those two elements and to give people sort of the idea that, you know, we're all learning together and we're all kind of like sharing this passion together, and you may not have to know everything about cars or games, but we're all here to kind of share that knowledge. So so to do that on ForzaMotorsport.net, one of the first things that I started doing was tapping into the resources of the team because there's so many serious hardcore car buffs on the team that not only do they know a lot about cars, they actually race. You know, Roger Jackman, who's our research guy, he's a rally driver, and our test manager and our art director, they race motorcycles.
Yeah, we talked about this before. I mean, it's a different kind of game because you guys are doing a simulation.
Right.
And it's not like you're making a first-person shooter set in space. We can kind of come up with, well, that's the way the metrics of that vehicle are going to work. You know, you can do whatever you want. You guys really have to stay true to the form. So you have to research all these vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what a lot of people don't realize, is that when you guys do research, I mean, it's as close as you can get it.
Yeah, and I haven't really looked at the research matrix carefully, but just from glancing at it, it's intimidating. It's daunting. It's, you know, it's huge, and it's very, very detailed. So I wanted to take some of that, the knowledge that's here, and sort of build content off of that. So, for instance, one of the first things I did was do the article that we did last week with the dyno session. We dined. So a little background on that too. The audio team at Forza at Turn 10 is what we're called now. The audio team, they've had contact with, you know, hundreds of cars to capture sound from, and to do that, they have to throw it on a dyno. And
now, what is a dyno? Explain to people that don't know what a dyno is.
Dynamometer is, I guess it's a device that will that you put your car on and it. And you spin tires on it, and it measures power output.
So basically, you can drive in place.
It's a treadmill for cars.
Yes. Got it.
And so there's a local dyno in Redmond that is like a four-wheel dyno, and you know, you can put cars on it and go like 200 miles an hour or something.
That's unbelievable.
It is really crazy. So how they capture audio is they put cars on there. And they run it on the dyno because they need to do that with natural weight of the car to make the engine sound right. And some really amazing cars have gone through there. So, and we have a big archive of, you know, pictures, footage, and also we're in constant contact with the owners of the cars. So what I thought, hey, you know, why not really profile and highlight some of these cars that we've played around with, because they're really awesome. And so the first car we did the article on is the BMW M6, which is owned by a local racer named Eric Brandt.
Yeah, so where do the cars come from that you throw in the dyno? I mean, clearly we're not, I walked over here and the parking lot's not filled with new cars. So we're not buying them. So where do you get the cars? I mean, because that's...
Well, so there's, I mean, the team here, they're pretty proactive. And I know that one guy, the audio content coordinator, he's in touch with a whole bunch of car owners.
Right.
So, and he actually travels the country to track down some really pretty rare cars.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah. So he, I mean, he basically has relationships with all these guys.
So you guys are tracking who owns these guys. And you go out and spend time and capture them.
And I think for owners, it's, you know, it's cool for them because they get their car kind of, you know, in the game. They get the credits in the game.
Yep.
They also get a free dyno session, which, you know, really tells them a lot about their own cars.
Right.
So, so the idea is to, you know, do articles on these cars. Last week we did the BMW, Our next session is going to be on a really pimped out Integra.
Oh, really?
Type R.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty popular car among tuners. And the car after that, it's a surprise, but I'll just say it. It's a Lamborghini, but I won't say which one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. So
yeah,
Lamborghini,
awesome. Yeah.
So maybe not for that session, but maybe I can come down sometime and record some audio. I'd love to see what it sounds like.
We have one tomorrow if you want to swing by. Yeah,
maybe I'll swing by. Yeah. Sounds like a good Friday afternoon thing to do.
Yeah, I'll put you on the invite. Yeah, you have to wear earplugs. It's just super loud.
Is it? Well, that's maybe
it's,
I like
it's,
to
it's
do
violently
that.
Violently loud. Yeah.
So you guys, Dan talked about this a little earlier. The community just really sprung up underneath the original Forza, and you guys are really taking that to the next level.
I was surprised being on the press side. You know, I was a little bit disappointed in how the community was handled. I mean, to be honest, I was hoping for more.
Yeah. When you say handled, you mean?
Well, it was just sort of like, it felt like an afterthought, right?
Right.
It was like the game came out, it was a great 90 plus game, and then somehow, like, there wasn't any anticipation that there would be people who wanted to, like, talk to like minds who loved
this
game.
Right.
So it was hard to find a group of people who, like, loved Forza if you didn't find a little, you know, pocket of those folks on the Gran Turismo sites or something, you know?
Right.
So,
But we have our own site now. We have you in here.
Right.
So we're going to get that. We're going to get everybody pointed in the right direction.
So the community, I think, sprang up because the game was so good.
Right.
It's sort of like you can't really stop a community. Even if you don't put any official effort behind it.
Right.
It's just there because the game itself.
The product is so strong.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
So with Forza 2, I mean, with the things I know about Forza 2.
Yeah. That you can't talk about.
That I can't talk about. The community is going to be massive. I mean, some of the tools that the team is giving me as community manager are just so incredible. I mean, we're going to be able to connect people in so many cool ways that I can't talk about.
Right,
again,
of course.
Yeah.
But, of course, I mean, people seen some of the cool stuff that you guys have ideas for and, you know, some of the other first parties have done. I'm sure you guys are taking it to the next level.
Yeah, and... you know, if you visit the website now, what's there is I'll just say it's the first evolution of what it will be at some point. So, and it's going to, you know, have a lot to do with the game. So
I have to ask: we haven't talked. When is the game shipping? Have we announced a date?
I think we announced holiday.
Holiday.
It's, yeah.
So now, I mean, I just had this discussion last week with somebody from PR because holiday means something entirely different to everybody around the world. So we're talking fourth quarter of 2006, the calendar year.
Well, I would say that holiday is more specific than quarter.
Okay.
So in my mind, a holiday is anywhere from October to December.
Okay, so that's fine. That's fine. I just want to make sure, because a lot of people around the world, you know, like the Australian people are scratching their head when we said we did the spring release. They're like, what's going on? It's not spring down here. So that's right. That's why I wanted to explain that. And so that's good. So it's going to be October, November, December-ish.
Yeah.
So well, that's fine. Are you guys feeling good about it? You on track? You got a lot of work to do? Is it going to be a long summer?
Are you?
It's going to be a really long summer.
Right.
Yeah, we're... I don't know. I've been doing this for about 7 years. So
right.
When you say on track, my version of on track is kind of like, you know, on fire with guns blazing,
right,
and all of that. And I'm like, yeah, we're on track. But anyone else would, you know, the Bugs Bunny cartoon where
right.
the plane's going straight down,
right,
and he's screaming, and
right.
the last second he finds the air brakes.
Right.
Yeah,
that's going to be you guys.
That's developed.
So you're going to pull back that air brake and out pops Forza 2.
Right.
And you guys, it's going to be all done and crisp and ready to go for the holiday season.
That's right. So, same thing. I mean, for Forza 1, we really, really burned hot and still, you know, produced it.
Well, I am going to say this is when I was walking over here, I happened to swing by a couple people's monitors and I got a little bit of a glimpse and it looks amazing. Some of the stuff I saw up on the screens was amazing. So you guys have done some great work. Anyway, Dan and Chi, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was a totally different vibe going over there. It kind of reminded me of walking into an automotive class, you know, in high school, where there's just all these gearheads over there, and they're tweaking and tuning and whatnot. It was kind of the same vibe, except without the grease smell, because it was all computers. So yeah, it was great. Look forward to having Forza 2 in my Xbox 360 at the end of this year. So look forward to that, guys. All right, the next interview I have is with one of the producers from Red Storm, and Red Storm's responsible for Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter. And he's going to tell us a little bit about the upcoming marketplace content that's going to be available. And it's a ton. Now, of course, I did this over Skype, so there's a couple of audio dropouts, but I don't think anything too serious. So let me go ahead and give you a listen to that interview right now.
My name's Prince Eric. I'm associate producer at Red Storm Entertainment. Work primarily on the Ghost Recon series, have been for the past 5 years or so.
So you've actually worked on, we were talking about this right before we started recording, is you've actually worked on the Xbox versions of the Ghost Recon series, which was huge on the Xbox, and now you're
right.
working on the Xbox 360. What are some of the differences working from the original Xbox to this one? Then I want to talk to you about the new content that's coming out.
Okay, the major differences are just the amount of things that you can do with it, the amount of content that you can include. With the old Xbox, at the time, there was a lot of, you know, that was the step forward. You know, there was a lot of stuff to work with, but, you know, you were limited in the amount of content that you could put in.
Right.
This one, it just provided us to do a lot of things that we wanted to do on the old Xbox but weren't able to do, whether it was visually or with sound or content in general. We just got to do a lot more because there's so much more to work with. So it's just a better platform to work with in that aspect.
So fast forward, we're talking about the Xbox 360, and I have to ask you this because I ask all my guests, what's your gamer tag?
My gamer tag is AlphaMale06, AlphaMale06.
So you're going to get a ton of friend requests, I bet you. But the reason I wanted to get you on the line is you are working on, or have worked on, the Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, the Chapter 2 content. Is that the official name for it?
Correct.
So tell us a little about this. This is going to be a premium downloadable content available from the marketplace soon. And can you just walk me through? Because I looked at the list, and frankly, it's overwhelming because there's so many pieces to this content. So let's walk through it together, if you would.
Well, what we decided to do was we wanted to continue the co-op campaign, and this just gave us a forum to do that. So this is Chapter 2 of the co-op campaign. Everybody played the first chapter, so now this is Chapter 2. Again, like the first one, it's four maps, they're called Coffee Plantation is the first one.
Yep.
Shipping Port is the second one. River Depot is the third one, and Jungle Mines is the fourth one.
And so you were responsible for producing. What exactly? Where can I see your fingerprints on these maps or on this package?
Well, a lot of you know, the artists and designers are responsible for they should take all the credit.
Right.
You know, as producers, we come in early to, you know, we put our ideas that we think might be a good idea. So I don't know if the fans will actually see anything that, you know, that we as producers did. But we know they're there.
Right. Yeah. You're kind of like the orchestra. You're kind of like the maestros at an orchestra where you're kind of making everything happen. And even though you're not making the music, you're coordinating making things happen.
Pretty much. And you know, you have to give all the credit to the engineers and the artists and the designers and the QA department. They do all the really hard work. You know, they make us look good.
So you've got four. So you've got four new maps in Chapter 2, which you just talked about: Coffee Plantation, Shipping Port, River Depot, and Jungle Mine. And then, what are some of the other pieces of this package?
What we decided to do is we wanted to give a lot of content in this map in this package. So what we did is we created four brand new maps, and then what we decided to do was take four fan favorites from the original Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter and relight them. And we also decided to take the four new maps that we created for package, you know, downloadable package, and relight those as well. So what the fans are going to get is a total of four new maps, although they're relights of eight of them are relights.
Right.
They play totally different. So I think when people sometimes they read that these maps are relit, but they don't really you have to take into account that they're different times of day, so they play completely different. So each map, even though they'll know the layout of it, it's a totally different game experience.
It's a different experience. So, all right. So we've got, so you've got the four maps in the multiplayer in the new in the chapter two. You've got the eight new maps. Some of them are which relit, and then what else is on here? I'm just going to let you go through all the content, and then I'll come back and ask you the questions after.
Okay, no problem. Well, really simply, we decided to add some new camo patterns. So we have a Canadian and a British camo pattern.
Mm-hmm.
They're if you've never seen them before, they're still the jungle type,
right?
But they're very cool. They're very cool. We've got four new faces. So we started off with 10 faces. Now there's four more, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
They're all really cool as well. What the fans are really going to start digging are the new game types and the new weapons.
Okay.
So we've got five new weapons in this one. One of my favorites that we're adding is the silent sniper rifle. Fans have been begging for it. And we didn't get it in the original. Now we want to get it in downloadable content.
Got it.
There's a M468, which is a rifleman weapon. I don't know how to go into it. It's pretty much it's a very, very good weapon.
Okay.
The M468 is the same, but it has we have a underbarrel grenade launcher on it. So that's the third downloadable weapon. We've got a AK-47 light machine gun with a drum barrel in this one. And we've got another SCAR weapon. It's the SCAR HSV, is the fifth weapon that we're adding.
And how does that differ from some of the SCAR weapons that are in the already in the game?
Standard barrel, improved optics. It's a better long-range shooting weapon than a lot of the other SCARs.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, so then of course, everyone's going to be excited about the new game types. Tell me about those, because I'm excited about those.
Okay, we have a new game mode. It's called Team Battle.
Okay.
And in that new game mode, there are two new game types. Blind Siege is making a return, and Team Battle, a brand new one that no one's ever seen before. So the way it works is, I don't know if you're familiar with Siege at all.
Sure.
So it's Siege, but are you familiar with Blind Siege?
No, I'm not. So why don't you actually, maybe some people are listening may not know how Siege works, so let's walk through it together.
Well, the initial Siege was, there was two teams. One team was the attackers, and one team was the defenders. There was basically a zone that the defenders had to defend, for lack of a better word.
Sure.
And the attackers, their goal is to get into that zone by either capturing it or taking out all of the defenders. And then getting in the zone, and they're keeping it for a couple of seconds, and then they win. So each team has a different goal. It's very stressful to be on the defender side. The attackers seem to have all the fun.
Right.
But I was never good at the game type. but with Blind Siege, what's going to happen is, a downfall of the old Siege was that the attackers always knew where the zone was going to be.
Right.
So what's new with Blind Siege is both teams have random zones. So the zone that people are sieging is going to be random, so the attackers aren't going to always know where to attack.
But once the game starts, they'll know where it is.
Once the game starts, they'll know where it is.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
But they won't always know where it is. So, you know, a lot of teams that play together a lot have strategies built up. They can't necessarily do that as easily now.
Got it.
They don't always know where the zone's going to be.
Cool.
And likewise, the defenders aren't going to always know where the attackers are coming from.
Right. So they're going to have to switch up and change their strategy on the fly.
It's going to be very strategy oriented. And Blind Siege is a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun. And it was one of the things that we got in trouble for not adding in Graw. We got a little bit of heat, especially when I would go out and talk to fans about why we didn't have it in there.
Right.
So what we made sure we did is when we did the downloadable package, we definitely, that was one of the first things we said has to be in there.
Is Blind Siege. So tell me a little bit about the team battle mode.
Team battle, if people are familiar with Domination, team battle is very similar to Domination, except for the fact that you now have AI battling with you. You have helicopters on, so when you get the most zones, the helicopter is going to come in by default and help you. So it's your goal is to capture as many bases as possible and to reach a score limit. So there's like a default 1,500 point score limit. So once you get 1,500 points, you win. But you not only have to look out for the other team, you have to look out for their AI as well.
So, this is a ton of new content that's going to be, and this is all one package. You can't buy, you can't say, hey, I only want the customizable faces and two of the weapons. No, it doesn't work that way. It's an all or nothing. You got to buy, you got to get
all
everything. So, how long have you guys been deciding what we wanted to do for the downloadable content? I mean, how long did it take to create this? Because I know, you know, people think that, you know, coming up with the games and whatnot, you know, the downloadable content's fairly easy, and it's fairly complex because you guys want to do it right. So, walk me through what that process is like.
Well, usually during close to the end of a project, we'll start thinking about what we'd like to do for downloadable content. And so we sit around and have a lot of brainstorming meetings and just try to figure out what we think would be a good thing to put together for the fans. We want to put together something that we like to play. If we like playing it and we think it's cool, you know, because as gamers, you know, we don't want to give them something they don't want to play.
Right.
So near the end of the project, we start thinking about what we want to do. And once the project wraps and everybody gets a little bit of a break, we come back and then nail down exactly what we want to do and start working on it.
What I wanted to bring up is that a lot of people think that, you know, with downloadable content is that companies decide to, you know, hey, we're going to leave this out and this out and make it downloadable content and make more money from the customers. But that, clearly that's not the case with you guys.
Right. Well, what we've done, and historically what we've done, is we put together a game that we think is going to be good. And, you know, and you have to take into account that there's a limited amount of space on the disc. So a lot of times when we put out the original game, it's, you know, trying to try something new. We don't want to keep giving them the same thing over and over again. So what we do is sometimes we take out things that we don't know are bad to take out until the fans say, hey, why'd you take that out? I love that.
Right.
So we don't intentionally leave anything out. Saying, well, we're going to give it to them later.
Yeah.
Usually with downloadable content, we have ideas of cool things we'd like to try, and we have a pool of things that we can draw from. But when we do downloadable content, some of the stuff that we add is fan feedback because we didn't do something that they thought would be cool or that they liked in the previous game. But a lot of it, what we try to do is just to give them more. What fans usually ask us for is more weapons and more maps. Weapons and maps, the things that they want, sadly take the longest to develop. So that's why we really start planning early, you know, at the end of the project, because we know it takes several months to build a brand new map.
Right.
And it takes, you know, quite a while to put together, the weapons. So, we do the easy part during the end of the project.
Right.
Then we start the hard part, which, you know, as a fan, I want content right away.
Right.
But as a developer, I also know that it takes time to create that content.
So. Yeah, so you, with the Xbox 360 or with Advanced Warfighter, you guys have built this really solid foundation and everything else, and now you can kind of go back and revisit it and enhance it. It's kind of like a PC add-on pack. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, the good thing about DLC and the good thing about Xbox in general, it gives developers an opportunity to, you know, hindsight being 2020, you get to go and either, you know, tweak something or add something that you didn't think of in time to start developing it, because you don't want to keep pushing. I mean, literally, you could push a game back forever.
Right.
Because new ideas keep coming up and you want to change stuff. At some point, you have to put your foot down and say, this is what, you know, what it's going to be.
And sometimes that happens, for instance, like with Duke Nukem.
Right. No comment.
So.
But, you know, you know, we really like doing DLC. I mean, historically, DLC's always been something we've known is going to happen. Whether it's, you know, I started here on the first Ghost Recon PC, and that, you know, we were doing add-on packs and stuff like that. So the Ghost Recon franchise has always had that. It's always been fans know they're going to get something, and they can kind of guess that they're going to get something else.
Right.
So we like keeping that tradition alive, so we always have ideas, and our designers are really good about, you know, when they start developing a game, just making a big pool of ideas. Some of them good, some of them, you know, not so good.
Yeah, you just erase them off the whiteboard if they're not good.
Exactly. So, I mean, and we have a, we're lucky that our management gives us a lot of freedom with creativity, and so we're very blessed in that aspect. But we like making sure that we put out a quality downloadable package.
Well,
so we don't want to rush it out. We don't like rushing anything out.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and it's obvious. I mean, the Ghost Recon, you know, Advanced Warfighter it's the number two game on Xbox Live played on the Xbox 360
right
now, right behind Call of Duty 2, which, you know, obviously was out when the console
right
launched. So it's
exactly
huge. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe this, maybe with this content, maybe it'll leap to another number one spot. But I mean, it's a fantastic game. I mean, as you said, the fans love it. And I mean, I love it. I'm having a great time with it. It's one of those we can't get enough. Of course, I have to ask you, you know, how much is it going to cost and when's it going to be available? That's what everyone wants to know.
As far as cost goes, that has not been released yet, and
sure,
we really honestly don't know.
Right.
But the fans could expect to know in the next couple in the coming weeks. So
sure,
that's coming really soon. It's just, you know, we don't have any nothing to tell them. Really.
Nothing to tell right now, but you guys are working. You've worked on it. So I want to recap. You've got new maps, new game types, new camouflage, new faces. And new weapons, all part of the one package. That's pretty
all
significant.
Part of the package, yes.
So, I have to ask you, what's your favorite part of this package? When you look at this, you're like, yeah, I'm really glad we got that in.
Right. Well, first off, my favorite part of the map, the package are the maps. The raw maps look really, really good. But just like with the old Xbox, the more that the artists and the engineers get to work with it, the more they learn. So these maps, the brand new maps, look gorgeous. So my favorite part right off the bat is the new maps.
Okay.
And then of course the new weapons run a close second, because I really like the silent sniper rifle. There's nothing better to me than the sound of a silent weapon.
So that is the SR-25D, correct?
SR-25SD.
SD, I'm sorry, right.
Yeah. Honestly, the relights are always fun because, you know, we knew we had a good multiplayer experience because we like playing it. We still play it in the office, but it's really cool to see what the artists have been able to do with the Graw maps and the relights of the brand new maps coming, because it is a really, and you have to play them to really believe it.
Right.
But it's a completely different game experience. Like Worf from the original map was a really cool night map. But daytime, it plays completely differently.
Hmm.
So it's a really, really... The maps and the weapons are really what I'm waiting for.
So this means I'm not going to be able to hide in the shadows underneath the docks anymore and whatnot?
Not so much. Not so much. But it's the maps, the weapons, and the game types are really what... not to take anything away from the camo or the,
right,
or the faces, but... you know, that's where the bread and butter is going to be, and that's what the fans really are going to adhere to, and they're not going to be able to believe how good these new maps look.
Well, Prince, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. Obviously, as soon as you guys have a date and a price available, I'll post it on my blog. I appreciate you coming on the show today, and I look forward to playing you sometime on Ghost Recon with these new maps.
Anytime. Take it easy on me, though.
All right. You take it easy on me.
Right. No problem.
Thank you, Prince. Appreciate you coming on the show. Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter coming soon to the Xbox Live Marketplace near you. If you're looking for pictures and maybe some more details around what we talked about, you can go up to xbox.com and I'll put a link on my show link dump that will show you some more details on it and just kind of spell everything out. So good stuff there. Of course, once the content is available, I will be posting it on my blog, and you guys can go download it. That will be premium content. All right, let's jump into the third and final interview for the show, and it is with a good friend of mine, Ross, who's going to tell us what's going on with Xbox Live Arcade. A lot of buzz lately on Xbox Live Arcade, specifically, where are all the games? So I got my good friend Ross back in here. Ross, how are you?
I'm great, Larry. Great to be with you again.
So you and I ran into each other a couple weeks ago.
Right.
And you said, hey, I need to come on the show again. And remember what I told you? I said, you're not going to come on the show again until you explain what the hell is going on with Street Fighter. So let's get that out of the way right now.
So a couple comments. We've talked about this before. First of all, let it be known that this is, of course, is not Microsoft's product. It is Capcom's product.
Right.
And we defer incredibly in a very specific way to Capcom's desires and wishes because it's their franchise and very much a holy grail for their company.
Right.
So from our standpoint, we are supporting Capcom's development efforts in every conceivable way possible. But ultimately, the measure of quality that determines when the game can be shipped and be determined to be ready for the masses is up to Capcom and their management team. It has proven to certainly be no small challenge to try to integrate very legacy code that comes from a game from the coin-ops, frankly, and had various levels of modifications done to it.
So wait a minute. Stop for a minute.
Sure.
They're taking code that was in a cabinet, and they're actually bringing it forward and using it in the 360?
Lots of emulation. And
wow.
As you know, with a fighting game, the devil's in the details on timing.
Yep.
Fighting games are absolutely critical to be pure in their timing, or they just completely fall apart.
Right.
And taking that kind of code timing that works great in a coin-op cabinet, and when you've got two people on basically the same box with two joysticks, that timing can pretty much be tuned very well for that.
Right.
It is an entirely different affair to take, game code that is of that legacy flavor and integrate it into an Xbox Live type of environment in a network setting that has lots and lots of different variables associated with it, like latency, and if you're going through a NAT or a network address translation and so forth with routers today, and trying to do the kind of tuning and balancing to it that comes when you have to cross literally continents to play, theoretically. So, it is a simple matter. No one's going to apologize for it. That Capcom and we are perfectionists on this, and we're not going to ship this game before it's ready. Certainly to be really, really fun and playable over the network, over Live, because
right.
that's what everybody's waiting for.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to play quarter mode over Live.
So for those people that are just catching up and just listening, maybe for the first time, Street Fighter was announced coming 3 or 4 months ago, right?
Actually, even earlier than that, I think we announced it at CES with Peter
and
Bill.
January. That's right, January.
Right.
So we talked about that, and then there's been a lot of questions, what's going on? So explain to me what the different modes are. Can you tell me what those are?
Not in the kind of detail that Capcom could, but one of the key modes of play is really trying to go back to this quarter mode of play. Obviously, you can play single player and doing the traditional versus modes with yourself and advancing through all the different characters and so forth.
Right.
The key mode everybody is waiting for and that everyone's really hyped for, and Capcom's excited about this, as we are, is the virtual quarter mode, which takes you back to the old days in the arcade where, two people are playing on the coin-op machine and you put your quarter on the glass saying, I got next game,
next,
and you keep playing the winner.
And a lot of people listening to this show may not remember that. They may think quarters is a drinking game.
That's true.
And it's not, so we're not talking about that.
no drinking games on Live Arcade. So this idea of being able to sort of virtually line up to keep playing the winners in a over the globe, basically, sort of harkens back to the days of saying, who's kind of the king of the Street Fighter? How long can you keep playing, basically?
Who's the king of the arcade?
Yeah, for Street Fighter, certainly.
Yeah.
And this is a very cool, innovative mode that I think will really start stimulating a lot of creative thinking about what to do with an online network for lots of other kind of games, too. So it really is important that this game be rock solid, perfect, and we obviously support Capcom every which way we can, both technically and from a business standpoint, and every way that's necessary to make sure the game is top notch, and we've had our advanced technology group, our ATG guys, helping them with network timing and, you know, numbers of packets and all the rest of the latency issues. And again, we've had some, you know, great breakthroughs. I won't really go into a lot of the details because, frankly, from my side, and more in the business and portfolio management and planning position, it's not a kind of level of detail that I would go into anyway.
Right.
The program managers and Capcom themselves talk daily, and they work with development daily, and lots of bug bashing and testing going on, and things are getting lots better.
So you're not going to give me a date?
Nope.
Because you don't know a date.
No, I don't. And I would only say that progress has been, we've had some serious breakthroughs, and things are really looking much, much better. So it's certainly, hopefully, not, you know, months from now,
right.
and I use the plural there carefully.
Right.
But it's probably not like next week either.
Sure.
So we are making good progress.
That's good to hear. So I'll look forward to hear from you guys when it comes down. When I get that email in my inbox that I can post out on the blog that Street Fighter is ready to go. Now, of course, last week they released some content for Street Fighter. They released some of the pictures. Have you seen those?
No, I haven't. That's cool.
I'll pull those up while we're where is it down here? Street Fighter. So there's actually I think there's four or five picture packs. I'm pulling it up right now. Yeah, there's different.
Oh yeah, right.
Different themes. There's a theme and two and three picture packs. So that was really. So everyone got really excited when they saw that on the arcade. They're like, "Oh my God, Street Fighter!" And then they got there. Wait a minute.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem of some of the internal views of some of these things sort of tend to draw conclusions which aren't necessarily really accurate
right.
all the time.
Right. So. Sorry. So Street Fighter, we'll look forward to getting an update from you on that. And I'm just telling you right now, you're not going to come on the show until this thing ships. That's the deal.
Believe me, I won't want to. You think I want to come back and talk about this again?
So we're getting the tough ones out of the way right at the beginning. What's going on with poker?
All right. Poker's the other one that probably people are scratching their heads on.
Screaming
or swearing at us or whatever. We also announced poker. Actually, Bill Gates and Peter Moore did at CES as well.
Right.
We also announced that, just to recap that, we announced that it would be a free game of Texas Hold'em. It is not all kinds of poker, but Texas Hold'em. And that would be done through sponsorship. And the game has come along really well. That's also a fairly challenging game when you really break down more than just the concept or the mechanic of playing cards
right.
and playing, but you do have single player modes of play in this game. So there's an AI component to think about, as well as all of the tournament and laddering and matchmaking elements associated with it. It's not obviously a tremendously complex game graphically or anything like
right.
that, but we do have a nice client built for it. The situation for not shipping so far, it really boils down to the complexity, once again, of dealing with more on my side on this time of simply the sponsorship issues. And we have what we call an ad sponsor team that works with various sponsors. We're making sure we have the right sponsor with all of the right agreements in place. And there needs to be buy-off on both sides. And anytime those sort of things get involved, then certainly lawyers get involved.
Uh-oh.
And lawyers.
Party's over.
Love our lawyer. Don's a great guy, but
they want to make sure everything is buttoned up.
There's lots of complexities to agreements on both sides when logos and brands and everything else starts getting involved. So the game is come along really, really well, and I think we're just really looking to really nail down what our sponsorship position is going to be. So looking pretty good there, though.
So do you think that's months, weeks?
I'm gonna wuss out on that and not even give you one of those yet because
once you get legal involved, then all bets
are
off.
Yeah, there's just no way to be perfectly predictable.
Sure,
it's not. I would say it's either month. I'm not sure about the plural of that.
That's, sure,
maybe we'll leave it at that.
It's this summer.
Who knows?
Okay.
I think so,
okay.
but I'm optimistic and I'm an internal optimist, so. I hope that that's the case.
So we got the update on Street Fighter, got the update on poker. Let's look ahead. So you handle the portfolio, you're the portfolio manager.
Well, right. So what my job is really going out on the leading edge to find, both in a bidirectional way. I handle all of the inquiries from everyone, from two guys in a garage in Capitol Hill here who want to throw up their shingle and become a game developer, and Arcade kind of helps them do that now, or game publisher even.
Right.
All the way up to, you know, the size of EA, basically,
right.
who
major
wants to
publishers.
Look at, large publishers. So those inquiries come inbound into us, as we've done a pretty good job from a PR and marketing point of view of spreading the word of Arcade and the successes we've had so far. So, yeah, those inquiries come into me, and I field those and try to balance out and look at what an overall mix of games in the portfolio at various points and times in the life cycle of the console will be. And then I also go outbound into looking at there are certain genres or game types or specific even franchises that we'd like to see that would be big additions to the portfolio games. Case in point, Uno, for example, is something where we went outbound on that. Actually, though, the story on that is a little more interesting, way further back beyond the X Arcade story. But
right. Let's talk about Uno for a second, because I've got it up here on the screen. What a weird story that is. I mean, it's a solid game. We all remember growing up and playing it in the back of our parents' station wagon, going camping or on a road trip, in my case with my sisters.
Ours was Sunday after dinner.
Was it?
Yeah.
So we all have some connection with that game. And I think I heard someplace it's a huge conversion. Meaning a lot of conversion means people download and they actually choose to buy it. They go from demo to a full game.
Right. We kind of measure that as really one of the fundamental metrics of success for any developer, including ourselves and all of our partners for Arcade, is how many people download the trial version and then how many people decide after trying that trial.
They're going to convert to own.
Yeah, I want to pay my 400 points or 800 points for the full version and get it unlocked. As a point of comparison, in the PC casual game space on a lot of the game portals, our own MSN game site included, a really good game would probably be considered about a 2% conversion rate. Of course, that's across the millions and millions of PCs that are out there all over the world. So, but it is a different kind of market.
And the conversion for Uno's
has I think I don't know how public we're going in this, but it's exceeded Geometry Wars.
Right, that's huge.
Significantly, in fact. And it's only been out about 3 weeks or so. Coming up on a month, I guess, because we launched it right at E3. And, has become, in terms of total number of paid downloads, really our number two title pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And in terms of conversion rate, has become our number one title.
Why do you think that is?
Well, a lot of us are asking ourselves this question on the Arcade team, and I think we all kind of in agreement that this is a encapsulation of really what Xbox Live is all about. It's about community.
Right.
I've asked people who I definitely consider we're hardcore gamers about, ask them, what are you playing? And they go, well, we're playing the latest game, Oblivion, or they're playing Gras or something.
Right.
But I still am coming back and playing Uno every night. And I'm going, why?
Right.
And he goes, it's just so much fun to sit around, especially with people on your friends list, and just trash talk them and throw them down there, expletive deleted here.
Right.
Here's your draw four, or try to bluff your way through an Uno or whatever. And it's just so addictive because it's so easy, but it draws people together in this collaborative community environment.
I played a couple games a few weeks ago, and I ran into Uno griefers.
Oh, no.
Deal the cards, bitch! It's like, what is this? This is Uno.
Yeah, lighten up,
Exactly. So it's really is one of those games that is surprisingly easy. People just are addicted to it.
I have heard the anecdotal stories of people who will have a significant other in their lives, be it girlfriend, wife, father, mother, whatever, something like that, that is not in the video game space, and they're really, even on some of the casual games we've had, like even a Bejeweled, is not really that interested yet. But because almost there's no human almost in the on the planet that hasn't seen or heard of an Uno deck at some point in their life, probably, at least wherever we sell consoles. And you put this game up on the screen, and someone wanders by, and they go, "You're playing Uno as a video game?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, let me check this out." And they hand them a controller, and in 10 seconds, the controls are that easy to know, and the rules are pretty much known by everybody. And suddenly, this non-gamer is now playing video games.
Yeah, what I like about Uno is I can actually look away from the screen and do email, as we often do at Microsoft when we're sitting at home at night. And my controller will vibrate when it's my turn, so I know to turn to the screen. Of course, I can continue to talk with everybody. But I also like the fact that when you've got four people, one person can leave in the middle of a game, and the computer kicks in and starts picking up the pace and goes right along. Or vice versa. If you want to bring somebody in, it kicks the computer person out, and they slide right into their seat.
Right. That was very much done by design. And my hat's off. Our whole Arcade team's really There's an internal studio at Microsoft called Carbonated Games, which is kind of our internal name for the guys who build games for Microsoft Casual Games, and they're the group that put together Uno. And they did a fabulous job, we think, of just taking this really simple card game and, you know, looked another way. Another developer could have just sort of phoned it in, right?
Right.
And just said, yep, here's Uno, here's the cards.
Yeah, next.
But our developers really went the extra mile, I think, in an incredibly cool way to make this the be-all, end-all Uno that you could ever be, right? I mean, they've added the ability to... Everyone has their own house flavors of rules, for example. Of
oh,
when,
yeah.
You know, you can stack draw twos or things like that or other ways. And so the ability to customize this to the kind of the way you remember growing up playing Uno is another big draw for the game.
Of course, I can't deal from the bottom of the deck, though. But one thing that a lot of people don't know about Uno, or maybe they've discovered, it is actually the very first game to ship, and I'm pointing at the Vision camera.
Right.
And
yeah.
I've played that in a little bit online. And
it's a little freaky the first time,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's like, whoa, all of a sudden.
That's me.
It replaces your gamer tile
right.
with live video.
With your video stream, you're right.
And
yeah.
it's crazy.
And have you taken a snapshot of yourself now as your gamer pick for your friends list?
I have not. I can't do. They won't let me do that yet. The PR team won't let, because Major. Everyone knows Major Nelson, so
yeah.
They won't let me do that.
You'll be mobbed.
Yeah,
in the streets.
Exactly. So I'll be working on that one. But it's Uno's a great game. Tell me some of the other things that, you know, we've got some great stuff on arcade. It's kind of, I got to tell you, the community's saying it's kind of been a dry summer.
It's been a little slow.
And I mean, granted, it's only June, and you said Uno was released a month ago. So what's going on?
So the pacing of these games, first of all, developers are still very much, you know, consider a game that you know, we sort of officially greenlit to go into production, say, around last
part of this year.
Yep.
Those guys go through a bit of a learning curve. A lot of these are small developers who haven't been developing a 360 title before.
Right.
They're developing it for a new platform and understanding how to get live working in it. And frankly, we're looking at the schedule issues of just simply what does it take to make a good arcade title, and trying to get more predictive about what a release schedule would be. I will say this, that you're about to see some floodgates open.
Really?
And there are a number of games. The titles that we've announced at E3 with some of our major partners are coming along really well.
Let's talk about some of those titles for
sure.
Some people that, because there was a lot. I mean, when E3 happens, everybody's focused on Halo 3. You know, everyone's focused on Crackdown or Gears of War. There was so much that we announced, but so let's recap that a little bit.
Well, I'd say at the top of our list, and we made a lot of noise about this at E3, was Luminous.
Oh, boy.
You know, Luminous is almost, I might as well put the Luminous logo on my PSP because it's pretty much permanently
right.
welded in the drive slot of that machine.
Right.
I play it constantly.
You have a PSP?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a DS?
Uh-huh. DS Lite.
Oh, you know,
I've
talk
heard
about
your
that
story.
After. That's right. You have heard my story.
Yeah. I don't have mine. The Reginator has an autographed mine, though.
Well,
so.
I can work on that for
all
you.
All right.
Right.
Cool.
But, yeah, so tell me about Luminous.
So Luminous Live is a title we announced, of course, with the famous Q Entertainment, and Mizuguchi-san is the creator of that game. And it's been great because as a big, huge, I'm sort of a Luminous savant myself of playing this game so much.
Right.
I was very personally interested in making sure it really had that same really tight control. And they've been going through fairly frequent iterative builds of Luminous. And I played a build just yesterday that just felt incredibly tight. I was just cheering
right.
in my office going, yes, this feels so good.
So you probably haven't picked up your PSP since you've got this loaded.
You know, I do a little bit of put this down, play the PSP version, to do some comparisons and see if, from a pacing standpoint of advancing through the levels. And it's a different game, of course, too.
So you actually, you brought one with you. We're gonna fire it up right now, real
okay.
quickly.
I don't know what build you're working off of.
Okay,
here,
well, let's take a look.
Let's try.
Let's see what's going on here. Let's go
okay.
ahead and play the game. And this looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
So explain to people that don't have a PSP, or haven't seen the game before, what is the basic concept of this game?
Wow, this is a hard game to explain.
Wow.
It's kind of a hard game to explain without actually being able to watch this being played as well.
Right.
So forgive me if my descriptions don't really get the point across. Tremendously well, but It's a game not unlike Tetris in some respects, where you're matching, trying to create shapes and and clear things on the board.
Right.
The board is effectively a grid of boxes, and boxes are falling down of one of two colors or textures, as the case may be.
Right.
And your object is to create geometric forms of at least four, like a 2x2 grid.
Got it.
Or more than 2x2. You could do like 3x2 or 4x4 or whatever. In fact, the larger the blocks, the better, of the same color in terms of your score. And then a sweeping kind of bar comes across the screen, almost in a cadence kind of like fashion, that when you have created those matches,
it clears them off.
It clears those off and kind of wipes the board, and then any blocks above them fall down.
I'm doing horrible. Yeah. I'm doing horrible.
You're not doing great, Larry.
No, I'll stop playing. I'll take a look at that later.
they're certainly doing a great job of utilizing the 360's widescreen and HD capabilities. So there's a good use of the screen real estate on an HD display.
It looks gorgeous in HD.
Yeah. And they are using Xbox Live support as well, so I can play in a head-to-head mode with someone else, which is really, really cool. So
I wonder how that's going to work.
Well, if you've ever played the old Tetris attack, where you're creating and dropping lines, and when you do so, it sort of splashes blocks onto the other side, onto your opponent's side. It's very similar to that.
Yep.
And you're best, in this case, though, you're kind of squeezing horizontally the other person's blocks out. And being able to play over live, there's a lot of some pretty cool achievements in here as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at the achievements because that's what everyone goes and looks at right away. And I can't say what they are. I don't want to get in trouble, but these are kind of cool.
Well, there a lot of them are obviously very performance based, and some of them will be on just simply the thresholds of getting to certain levels and clearing so many blocks in periods of times, etc.
Well, look, I can choose my own character.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
And again, it's kind of be cool when we're able to go multiplayer with this, of being able to get people. You know, going head-to-head, which becomes a really frantic thing, because as you start doing well, you start squeezing your opponent out, and it gets pretty, and you can start yelling and screaming at each other over the headset.
Right. Yeah, we'll get Luminous Griefers.
Yeah.
Luminous Griefers. So that's a big title that we announced. Tell me about some of the other ones.
So a lot of the rest of this calendar year and into the early part of 07, we'll have a really big push in the retro console classics area. Those have proved pretty well with the titles we've done so far with Joust and Gauntlet and Robotron, Smash TV, etc. And a lot of the big guns that produce those games in this space are very eager and anxious and excited about bringing those franchises, as we are, to the platform. So just, you know, one by one, Konami, for example, is about to bring everyone's favorite Frogger to life on Live Arcade.
Right.
And
is there going to be multiplayer with that?
Yeah, there is. There's some really cool ways to be, you know, playing cooperatively and competitively with Frogger.
Right.
The cool thing about all of these games, in large measure, is the fact that these companies have done a really cool job of looking at what the 360 gives you, certainly in the case of multiplayer with Live, and enhancing these retro classics that way. But also being able to do some high-def touch-ups to things. I mean, if you load up Frogger, for example, much like what we did with Gauntlet and Joust, where there's sort of an enhanced mode. In fact, it's default. And you can look at the high-def version of Frogger, for example.
Right.
And if you have a chance to check it out, you'll see that as you look at this. In fact, we'll bring it up here.
Yeah, I'm loading it, and here's another one. I didn't even realize this is on here.
Most people remember Frogger from the old arcade days, and George Costanza made Frogger famous, of course.
25 years old, is that what it says? Wow. Right.
25th anniversary of Frogger.
Froggy's getting up there.
Yeah.
So tell me what was some of the modes in Frogger.
So the first thing you'll see, obviously, we're doing all the high-def screens and leaderboards on the menus and so forth. But go into the arcade game here.
Yep.
And now you'll see, as this thing starts, press one player start there. And now, as you can see right here, this is what we call the high-def flavor, but if you hit start right now and then go to options, help and options.
Got it.
And then change the graphics to original and press B.
Got it.
And go back, and now you can leave the screen size alone for a bit.
That's God.
That's the original Frogger.
I'm back at the arcade.
Arcade perfect.
I'm back at the arcade.
So this is obviously going to be looked just like it did on the arcade, with things are a little more blocky and pixelated than they are in our high-def world today.
So here's my feature request.
Yeah.
For any arcade games like that where they go old school, and maybe this is going to be a liability and legal won't let us do this,
yeah,
have the option to rotate at 90 degrees. So if I really want to get hardcore, I can do it on the side. I can turn my monitor up on the side.
Wow. I don't know. I'm flipping my TV on its side, Larry. I think my warranty would be voided probably on that. But
that's hardcore. Then I can mount it in a cabinet. It would be so cool.
Well, and some of the other things, like if you go into Pac-Man, for example, which is another big game we haven't talked about, but it's very much coming, they've really been preserving the absolute original aspect ratio and graphical layout, and this thing also is very arcade perfect. The only thing missing is that, you know, 50-pound strength joystick that you could lean on when you're playing playing Pac-Man. So.
Or the quarters again, the quarters up on the side there. So some of the other ones that are coming out, I want to talk about Cloning Clyde.
Cloning Clyde is done by Wahoo Studios, the company that brought us Outpost Coloki X, the strategy game, sort of Space Station Tycoon almost. And Cloning Clyde is a brand new kind of game that we haven't seen on arcade yet, and it's really the old school 2D platforming game with sort of some environmental puzzles associated with it. And obviously by the name you can indicate that it's sort of a science environment gone bad, and Clyde, who was a patient, can clone himself and use almost in a, think of almost, if anybody remembers the old game The Lost Vikings, there's some elements to that of having to send a clone off to do something that lets you get through this other area. And it's really got tongue-in-cheek, kind of funny humor elements to it. It's meant to be kind of a wacky Saturday morning cartoonish almost look to it, and the play is all about that platforming style.
Everybody who picks this up, I know we've had it at some events, just falls in love with it.
Yeah, it's really, really just something that's got a lot of character.
When's that going to be coming out?
We're coming along pretty well on that as well. I would expect that game to be done before the end of the summer. So, as I said, there's a lot of things that are really getting a lot closer. And the builds, it's just, again, timing and balancing. And Larry's pointing to RoboBlitz.
Can we talk about that?
Sure.
Okay, let's talk about RoboBlitz. Because this one, I didn't understand this one when I fired it up.
Well, RoboBlitz is a game that is, first of all, it's pretty phenomenal in one respect because it is the first arcade title that has been able to use the Unreal 3 engine in it, and it's pretty phenomenal that you can make a game fit inside of 50 megabytes, and this is pretty much all about robot combat.
Now, when you say 50 megabytes, let's stop for a moment and talk about that.
Sure.
So there are some strict size requirements around Xbox Live Arcade games.
Well, we'd
is
rather,
that right?
We call them, they're not TCRs per se, or what? To explain what that is, a technical certification requirement, which are hard and fast. You know, a title can't be certified and be sold if it fails a TCR, for example.
Right. But, and now this isn't about gameplay or game quality. TCRs are just technical.
Like for example, your game has to behave a certain way if somebody, you know, pulls the memory unit out pulls the controller out or something like that.
Right.
So the size issue on arcade titles is very much a guideline that we give to developers, but it is a guideline right now that we are enforcing, certainly because there's reasons for those who have a core unit that don't have a hard drive. We want them to be able to download an arcade title to something, and that would be on a memory unit.
Right.
And memory units are, you know, about 64 megabytes in size with a little bit of that space carved off for, you know, gamer tag and system config info,
etc. You know what I got here?
You got a...
That's the first...
A larger one?
That's the first 256 megabyte card. They just gave it to me this week.
Wow.
Isn't that cool? Anyway, so I can download a ton on there.
Right. So,
anyway.
So the 50 meg also is really all about the... really setting us up as the type of game experience you can expect to find in arcade.
Right.
It is sort of, we sort of think of ourselves as a sandbox with boundaries around it. And what we're suggesting to the world is that you come into arcade... Much like my analogy is if Marketplace is the entire shopping mall, arcade is one of the stores in the mall.
Right.
And you find a certain kind of thing in arcade, and that's defined by certainly the price in points, for example, now, 400 or 800 or 1200 points.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also defined by the kind of game experience you will get in arcade, a pick up and play, easy to learn, just fun jump in kind of game.
Right.
And it's also defined by size. It's not meant to be a competitor to retail, for example, for the most part. And they're the kind of games that you would probably not even find at retail anymore because they've just sort of been squeezed out by the big budget blockbuster projects.
That's where you come in.
That's what arcade's all about.
Now, the other thing that's cool about the arcade games, I want to get to RoboBlitz in a second, but is that a lot of people may not know this, is that when you download it to your 64 meg card, you could actually, I can go to your house if I have the full version. We could play, as long as I'm connected to live, I can explain how that works, what I'm trying to get
at. So let's say we both have 360s, and in fact, we both have hard drives. It doesn't even really matter. I can download a game and purchase it with my points on my system.
Okay.
And then copy it onto the memory unit because it's portable enough. I can do that.
Right.
And I purchased it on my gamer tag at my house. I can take my cartridge then, my memory unit, and go over to yours, copy the game onto your hard drive, for example, or just run it from the memory unit as well.
Right.
And as long as I'm logged in on my gamer tag at your house.
And checked into live.
And checked into live.
Yep.
Then we have access to the full version, and away we go. We play the game fully. Now, say I've copied it onto your hard drive, and I take my memory unit, and I go home, and obviously I'm going to log in on my, I'm not going to leave my gamer tag on your system, of course. So I go home, and you're left with your gamer tag. You haven't bought the game yet, but you go to your hard drive, and lo and behold, the arcade title's still there. But when you log in as your as user number two on the title, you will see the title there in its trial form. So it's sort of a leave behind, almost a viral marketing.
That's the coolest thing ever. A lot of people don't know that.
And of course, if you delete if you have a core system and you have a full memory unit and you want to download the next game, you can delete that thing from your memory unit and in its full paid state, and then try something else and come back to it later.
And download
it. Xbox Live will always know that purchase status is associated with your gamer tag.
That's
you can download the full version again.
So let's talk about RoboBlitz.
So RoboBlitz was really something that the company's Naked Sky Entertainment in California, they've done extraordinarily cool job of pushing the envelope graphically with the Unreal 3 engine. And it is all about sort of, it's in a 3D kind of world. The builds are still coming together, but it's arena robot combat, basically, with using the Unreal 3 engine. They're doing some pretty incredible things as well environmentally with doing something called procedural texture mapping, which is instead of loading up the game with tons of different huge texture maps and so forth, which would be a real problem with that 50 megabyte space.
Right.
A lot of these textures are generated dynamically by a procedural texture engine, and it allows a game as graphically rich with the kind of Unreal 3 technology that you have in it to still fit inside of 50 megabytes. And then it's just roaming around, and you know, the build's a little bit early still in this. We're coming along pretty well, but it's going to include multiplayer support later on as well, where you can play this kind of robot combat over live with other people and kind of think of a deathmatch kind of classic environment.
Right.
And this will include, the single player mode will include AI, of course, and being able to kind of to roam freely and work with or battle against the other
this
boss.
This looks great.
Oh yeah, this game has been just jaw-dropping to people who have seen it and saying they can't believe this game is really an arcade title.
I'm like this cool robot, and I'm picking things up, and it looks really cool.
Yep.
So we've got quite a few games coming out, and of course it's going to be a busy summer for you.
Well, it's always busy. I mean, there's no lull here ever. I mean, like I said, Konami's got I think 9 titles slated to come out. They're starting with Frogger, but we have just more like Scramble and Time Pilot and Contra. Ever heard of Contra?
Yeah.
Super Contra's coming. The battling combat guys. There's Contra, the side-scrolling game, the original arcade classic, as well as Super Contra, which is more of the advancing, you know, through with your opponent or with your partner as well. You can play cooperatively there. Konami's also bringing Track and Field back, so we'll be able to do the whole. Everybody remember how to do the? Oh yeah, we'll be wearing controllers.
So basically, what happens when you're in the I'm putting my microphone down. You'd be in the arcade. You'd be doing that, right?
yeah. I hope we don't wear out too many controllers too fast with that game. But Track and Field coming, all with multiplayer support over live, of course, and some graphical enhancements. We announced, of course, at E3 with Sega that Sonic is coming to Live Arcade.
That's going
to
be great.
And we're working out the details of exactly what Sonic's
is. Is Tails coming along with him?
Well, that's the challenge right now, Larry, is there's so many different Sonic games
from
really the very first Sonic 1 on Genesis and all the way through to what's done on the Dreamcast and I think even beyond, even on other platforms since. So, again, the size issue is something we're looking at, as well as this kind of the kind of gameplay that experience we're looking for. So Sega and Microsoft are working together kind of collaboratively to determine the pacing of which Sonic games that we should bring out first versus later.
I really want to get my gold rings.
There you go. Ring. Think of all the different achievements that you could do there, too, right? Namco is bringing, obviously, Pac-Man, Ms. Pac-Man, Dig Dug's coming back to Live Arcade again.
Because that was on the original, right?
That was on the first arcade,
arcade.
Rally X and... forgetting one here. Galaga, of course. How can I forget Galaga?
Yeah, Galaga, right.
Midway, of course, has already announced some of their big franchises, like Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3,
yep.
Coming to Live Arcade, as well as Paperboy and Tapper. And
Paperboy?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, Paperboy.
Diddle-didn? Diddle-didn? Oh, boy, I played that in college. Yeah. That was a great game.
And if you... I'm sure there are Defender fans out there. Defender's coming to Live Arcade as well, doing some cool graphical high-def enhancements to that as well. In the area, though, that I get really the most excited about is the indie whole movement, of the whole indie studio of, you know, there's some guys out there that are incredibly talented, incredibly creative, and are not... Nobody knows who they are, and they haven't had much exposure because their games and their creativity has not made it to retail. They've got incredibly cool ideas and great designs that have just never had any space to get on a disc and on a box at retail.
So you're the guy who looks at them and kind of you kind of do a first pass evaluation.
Well, I kind of do it in phases. I kind of first want to find out a little bit about who they are, and I mean we're flooded with inquiries like, "Hey, I'm so and so in." You know, the Ukraine, and I want to do an arcade title.
Right.
And we're like, okay, let's find out how legit this really is and find out some background about the company and the people. Do they really have experience? Are they really a company, or are they just some guys thinking about how cool it would be to make an arcade title?
How do people get in touch with you? How do they submit their
there
ideas?
Is on Xbox.com, there is a section for Xbox Live Arcade on development where they can... sort of start the inquiry process by sending an email to arcade@microsoft.com.
Okay, simple.
And it ends up filtering down into my inbox, and I have some an assistant that helps me filter that and then really start inquiring on who this developer is and what kind of their ideas are and just really kind of try to take a measuring stick of their quality expectations to see that they match what we're looking for. And then once they go through that process, we kind of, again, collaborate with them on the kinds of games that we're looking for as well.
Right.
Versus not just what they have to offer. And a lot of it is a two-way back and forth on the kind of games they'd like to make. Generally, in many cases, it's more than one idea.
Right.
So I'll help them prioritize those. Once those things, just as a continuation of this, I don't make these decisions unilaterally at all. I mean, I take the games that are fleshed out with a good concept and that aren't being replicated a dozen times by other games in the portfolio mix. That's really one of my main jobs, is to make sure we don't end up with six poker games and five backends.
It's a good balance.
And that we really do hit the franchises that we're looking for first, that I think everyone in the audience that it's looking for on the console. So once that's done and I've found a good mix, then I take it to our portfolio team, and I think you've talked with Greg Canessa before as well, our group manager. Greg and some producers, or PMs as we call them here, and a test manager, a development lead. We'll all kind of gather around a table once a week, and I kind of present the number of games that we'd like to, what I think are good fits for the portfolio that week, and we discuss them. And
that's got to be a fun meeting. I want to be in that meeting.
It's chaos. it's good. I mean, we've been pretty streamlined, and the challenge is, of course, we're a pretty small team. We're actually a very small team compared to the amount of interest and growth potential here.
Right.
So we're trying to grow the number of people as well. But we'll eventually kind of, you know, get to a point where a title is green lit, and that means that a title, we go back to the developer and say, yeah, this is a good title for us, and we need a full development plan for it, and start building schedules.
Is 2%, 10% of the you get green lit? 50%? I don't think it's that high.
Obviously, we're at the very early stage of our titles. I guess what I'm trying to do is act as a filter before it even gets to that stage.
Got it.
Before we even go to the portfolio team. We're so busy, it doesn't make good use of our time for me to bring a whole bunch of games that I'm pretty sure are not going to fly.
Got it.
Not good candidates.
So you got to give them the first sniff
and
test.
And show those to the team, and everybody says, yeah, why are we talking about this when we know we don't need this?
Right.
And I say, yeah, but I needed to show it to you. I don't do that because that's kind of a waste of everyone's time.
Understood.
So I am sort of that first filter of making sure there is a good fit, and really also driving sort of some passion into the developer so they really know what it is we're looking for. And I tell developers really that I've kind of broken kind of the success factors for live arcade titles down into about four or five pillars, as I've called them. The first one really is all about the gameplay. It's just, is this game a good fit for arcade? Does it make sense that the kind of experience this is fits with all the other games in arcade and is a pick-up-and-play kind of experience? How much content is there? Obviously, the 50 meg issue comes up there typically. The number two pillar is the visual bar. We really do push the developers to be thinking about, you know, not, I kind of, the word ports almost become a bit of a dirty word for me, because I don't want games that come off looking like they're just a simple port from a PC or even a cell phone or a GBA or something like that. But they really look like brand new productions that a lot of crafting has gone in, especially artistically and visually for the box.
And they're using the full 16:9.
Yeah, yeah. And really looking at how to use shaders and what to do that's relevant, of course, for that gameplay type, so that they really do look like a next-gen title. Number three is really all about multiplayer. Wherever possible, of course. Not every game is multiplayer. GeoWars, for example, is a single-player game. And, of course, the element of achievements and leaderboards sort of turns everything into a multiplayer game in some respect. But more and more, the games like Uno are demonstrating how powerful the multiplayer model is on Live, and so we're encouraging developers wherever possible to really be thinking about multiplayer.
You mentioned Uno.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this a few minutes ago. Are a lot more developers, do we expect them to use the camera?
Yeah, that's become, in fact, that kind of segues to the last pillar. I'll hold that for 1 second. But multiplayer involves Live, which does mean things like camera support is certainly a discussion point for them. So to multiplayer, we also aggressively ask them to be considering co-op play as well as competitive play, and also multiplayer on the same console, kind of the family room party game environment rather than strictly just over Live.
Right.
So the ideal scenario is something that touches all those bases. And then the fourth pillar is trying to get them to express their creativity beyond the main release in thinking about extendable, what we call PDLC, or premium downloadable content.
Right.
And adding, be they expansion packs or levels, either full-blown expansions or microtransactional kind of things as well. We haven't done any horse armor yet, but but we, you know, there's a lot of things brewing in the downloadable space for arcade titles too. And the fifth and final area really boils down into sort of be thinking globally as well. We have we're trying to really aggressively support all of the world's markets and thinking about localization and the cultural relevance of some kinds of games. If there's a gameplay mechanic that doesn't make sense in all parts of the world, you know, we'll kind of look through somewhat of a filter if that makes sense right away.
But people forget is that marketplace is global.
Yeah, exactly. And then the camera really boils to that as well, which is sort of everything else. Is certainly any game that has multiplayer components to it, certainly over Live, one of the things that's coming up a lot is can the camera be used here? And certainly the camera's really kind of got three tiers of support, I suppose. There's just plain video chat support in a multiplayer game, where I see you, you see me, and we're playing hardwood backgammon together.
Right.
Another layer might be camera support that has some camera-enhanced features that lets you do gesture-like movements in a game if you have the camera, but it works fine with a controller if you don't. Kind of adds a new flavor of play. And then the third level would certainly be a camera-only game, which is all about, you know, gesture-specific movements and making sure you can't play it without the camera, in other words. So we kind of evangelize all those points to developers. I get pretty passionate on the phone with these guys or in meetings in person and say, "This, we really need you to drive towards a high bar here. This isn't just a port shop or a kind of a dumping ground of old IP that you know, you can repurpose and bring out on 360 and expect favorable returns."
Do most people get that?
It's been fantastic because the development community really wants to push the envelope on this platform, and as long as they understand early on what the guidelines and ground rules are, you know, they've been very happy about really pushing the envelope. There's a title from a small company locally that's coming out that we were showing at E3 called Small Arms.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah, it's
what
great.
What is that?
Small Arms, I would best describe it as Super Smash Brothers with guns. It's totally cool.
I'm listening. Go on.
It's very much a multiplayer You know, very much in the model of Smash Brothers Melee, where you've got a character and you're jumping around in some pretty cool, in this case, animated environments and physics in those environments are modeled pretty well. But now instead of just, you know, pummeling somebody with their fists or whatever, I'm going to give you a sniper rifle, maybe,
right,
or a automatic weapon or a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of gameplay. And it's got a bit of a, it's sort of Super Smash Brothers Melee for a slightly older audience,
right,
you might say.
Right.
So Small Arms coming out, probably this fall. The other game we showed at E3 that I also thought was great is the sequel to Mutant Storm Reloaded.
Oh.
Called Mutant Storm Empires.
Okay.
And that was actually my favorite title on the first batch of launch games on Live Arcade. The developer is really going beyond the mark here, and they're adding, if you remember in Mutant Storm, you really were battling these, you know, mutant hordes coming at you, and it was,
yep,
sort of a room-by-room, level-by-level basis on a single screen. Well, now in Mutant Storm Empires, you're in a scrollable level where you're advancing through an entire world, and these creatures are coming out of everywhere. It's still pretty much old-school gameplay.
So the mechanics are the same. It's just
very similar mechanic on the controller, but
it's a logical progression.
Right. With Xbox Live support as well,
yep,
so be able to play over the network with your friends, and a very big adrenaline rush with, right, lots of eye candy.
Right. That sounds like fun. Ross, I got to let you go. Before,
yeah.
Of course, we got to give your gamer tag out again.
Okay, it's Grazer.
So you're going to get inundated with,
yeah,
with friend requests and messages. And what about this game? And what about that game?
It happens daily. You know, I'm sort of used to it by now.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone has a favorite.
By the way, speaking of favorites, we got to talk about it. Because, mm-hmm, when you were last on a few months ago, you were telling us about your favorite, which is Load Runner.
My favorite game, yes.
And you're making some progress in there. I know you can't talk about it, but you're making progress.
Well, no details, but we have... We definitely know who the owner is now.
Good.
And we know where the IP lands, and let's just say very great and enthusiastic discussions have taken place.
So all you Load Runner fans out there,
no announcement.
Be confident that the man who loves Load Runner just as much as you is at the helm of this, and if, God darn it, if it can happen, it will happen.
I'm on it. Let's just leave it there. We'll see what happens.
That's cool. I'm going to let you go now. Again, I appreciate you swinging by and, you know, giving us the update on Street Fighter.
Always my pleasure.
And
coming
and
to, fun to talk about all these great new
and
games.
And Texas Hold'em. And hopefully, like I say, you're not coming on again.
No.
You and Greg can't come on again until we've got those titles shipped.
Next time we'll be talking about the achievements that you've earned in Street Fighter.
Okay.
Next time.
Okay, good point. And that you've earned. All right, man, I'll let you go.
Thanks, Larry.
All right, so there you go. Hopefully it gave you a few answers. I know it's probably not the answers you're looking for, but it's not that we're just kind of kicking back going, well, I guess we'll get Street Fighter out there whenever we can, and so on and so forth. So, you know, making software can be challenging, and making games that work, and as you heard Ross say, making the fighting experience be good is something that they're really focused on. So, Ross, I want to thank you for coming on the show, and as you heard, I'll have him on again in a few months when he's got more to talk about. So, So I wasn't able to give you some answers, maybe just a little bit of explanation, but that's the way it works. You know, I do what I can around here. All right, so as you can tell, I'm going, what are we at, like an hour and a half already? This show is just turning into an epic, so I'm going to try to kick it into high gear here and kind of wrap things up. I'm going to mention this a couple times. One of the reasons the show is so long is I'm not going to be doing a show next week. I have some obligations I need to take care of, so no show next week, so you can just enjoy the extra long one this week. So some of the marketplace items that went up this past week, we've got the Red versus Blue video. Out of Mind Part 1 is now in the Xbox Live Marketplace. The Oblivion content, Merun's Razor, is now online available, except for folks in a few countries, and I've got that on the blog. Speaking of Street Fighter, there's some picture packs and themes that are now available. That's premium content. MotoGP 06 got some picture packs available. And let's see, some 99 Nights preview is up on Xbox Live Arcade. Actually, that was last week. I'm catching up on myself here. What's going on here? So, all right, let's keep cooking along here. Let's see what else I have for news. So Xbox Live launched in Chile. Hopefully you guys are aware of that. If not, you are now. Xbox Live launched in Chile. Of course, one of the major things that happened this week is it was announced that our boss's 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 boss, Bill Gates, is going to be... He's not leaving Microsoft. He's not retiring. He is just going to be spending more time with his foundation, which is really good for a lot of people. It's really good. You know, he's had a major impact on the Xbox. Of course, he's the man. I had the pleasure of interviewing him last month when he was at E3. And it's going to be interesting. I think Bill would not leave the company unless he felt we were in a good position. So I think that's pretty much the way to put that. You'll see a lot of news on that one. Let's see what else. Oh, the PGR 3 tournament was in Italy this week. Our video editor, Craig, I need to do an interview with him, and Trixie went over there, and they put together a fantastic package. You should really go really go take a look at that if you get a moment. They did some really nice work over there. Making news this week, Matt Lee from the Advanced Technology Group here at Microsoft, who is it's the team that works directly with our game developers. He had an interview on Ars Technica, and a lot of people have picked up on that, and he was just doing some comparison between the Xbox 360 architecture, which he knows very well, and the PS3 architecture, which arguably he knows better than most people, but still doesn't know everything because he's not developing for it. But he's able to sit back and look from a developer's point of view and make some comments about that. So that's kind of cool. Go over and read that when you get a chance. Also, the Ubisoft went live with their Splinter Cell Double Agent, the official site. That's up. See what else I have here. I'm just kind of powering through all these notes. Oh, here's an interesting one. Go read this, and I'll put the link up. It's a Blogspot blog, but it's a guy who tried to buy an Xbox 360 off of eBay, and apparently the seller was scamming him, so this guy called up his mother, the scammer's mother, and was able to get him to call him back. It's pretty funny. I'll put a link up to that. It's an amusing read, getting called on by your mother. That kind of stinks. All right. Funny little thing. If you go to ProjectGothamRacing3.com, and I'll put a link to this, you can go through. They've got this like flash kind of intro game where you race along, use your arrow keys. And if you use your arrow keys, when your car gets to 170, use the arrow keys and you accelerate your vehicle to 170 miles an hour. Once you hit that speed, hit the J key. And when you hit the J key, a little video will pop up with Jay Allard, and it's actually pretty funny. I saw them filming this probably about a month ago, and it was just, I didn't know what it was. I was just walking by the parking lot and saw them filming this, and it was actually pretty funny now that I see it in context. But what's important to note is the car that you see Jay driving towards the end of this, that's actually his car. I've parked next to that quite a few times in the parking lot. Of course, I don't have a car like that, but Jay does, and that's why he's Jay Allard. So where's Jay Allard? You can find out by just going to ProjectGotham3Racing.com and taking a look at that video. The other guy in the video is Chris Lee, and Chris has worked on the marketing and project managing for Project Gotham 3 Racing. He's a good guy, too, so he's good. All good people over there. All right, I'm trying to pick up this. Can you tell I'm trying to pick up the pace a little bit here? Funny stories. I got called out by Kotaku. They called me a bully. And why do they call me a bully? Because I put a link up to the Sony Online Entertainment podcast. Do you hear that? There's a motorcycle going by outside. My neighbor has a motorcycle. Sony Online Entertainment podcast, and their headline was Sony Online Entertainment podcast stinks, and they kind of do their own thing. And then I put a link off to it, but just to ask what you guys thought, and apparently I was being nasty, so I didn't mean to do that. I was just kind of trying to see what you guys thought. One of the other ones is there's an interesting site out there that has links to, looks at all the consoles released in the past few years, you know, the PS1, PS2, Dreamcast, Xbox 360, and so forth. And they do a power consumption comparison. So I'll put a link up to that. That's interesting to see. The Xbox 360, you know, it's next generation, so it consumes a little bit more power than most, as you can imagine. But I'll put a link off to that. Oh boy, I'm talking so fast here because I'm trying to wrap this up. But, you know, we'll go into name the game. So let's go ahead and roll the name the game. So here's the name the game sound effect from last week. For those of you that are new to the show, and I know I have a lot of new listeners every single week, the name the game is fairly simple. I take audio from an Xbox or an Xbox 360 game, and I don't take audio from demos or unreleased games. So this is things that you can go out in the store and buy. And then I play them. And what you do is you email me, major@xbox.com, and you tell me what your guess is. You have one guess, and then you put in your gamer tag. And if I take all the correct answers, and I put them into a drawing, and the person that I pick out wins a prize. Pretty simple. So I'll explain that, what that is on the other side of this. But let's go ahead and roll that clip right now. Here's last week's Name the Game sound clip. So surprisingly easy. You probably, most everybody got this one. That was, of course, Doom 3. And I put that in there because, you know, I did the interview with Peter Moore last week, and he was talking about Doom 3 being backwards compatible. So that was kind of the little hint there. So a lot of people got it, but there was only one winner. Congratulations to, his gamer tag is Colossus. Congratulations, Colossus. You grabbed yourself a Plantronics Major Nelson headset for being the winner there and correctly identifying that that was from Doom 3, which clears the way for a brand new Name the Game this week. This one's going to have to go on for 2 weeks. It's not as easy as that one, but it's not as hard as some of the ones that I've had in the past. So let me go ahead and play that for you right now. Here's this week's Name the Game sound clip. All right, so maybe it's a little bit easier than last week. So if you think you know what game that from, it's an Xbox or an Xbox 360 game, please send me an email, major@xbox.com. In the subject line, please put name the game, colon, and then what your guess is. And then I take all the correct answers, put them into a drawing, and pull one out to win a Plantronics Major Nelson headset, just like our friend Colossus did this week. So give it a try. Let me know what you think. All right, let me go over some... do I have any Geeks and Gadgets stuff this week? I guess I really don't. I've been so busy with you know, work and just a bunch of other stuff that I haven't really played with any new gadgets stuff this week. You know, speaking of that, I'm always up for some hot tips on some cool software, whether it's Mac or Windows, because I have both, or any new gadgets. Of course, I read Engadget and Gizmodo and all the rest of those things, but I'm always looking for something interesting. All right, I'm going to point this out. I mentioned this earlier. I'm going to say it again. I am not going to be doing a show next week. So if anybody posts on the blog and says, well, why aren't you doing a show? Well, you can tell them because he said he wasn't going to do one. So the 25th, I will not be doing a show. I'm doing a little bit of traveling, and I won't be able to record a show next Sunday, which is a week from today. Not sure when you're going to be listening to this, but I usually record my shows on Sunday. And also Thursday and Friday of this week, which is the 22nd and 23rd, I'll also be traveling. So it'll my blog will probably be a little bit quiet, but I'll try to post as, you know, as often as I can when I can get away. So that's what's going on there. Okay, so that pretty much wraps up this week. I want to thank you for downloading my show. I want to thank my friends at CentureCom for providing me a secured and assured hosting environment. They've always done good work for me. This is Larry Herb, Xbox Live, Major Nelson, saying thank you for downloading my show. Have fun, play fair, make sure you send feedback. Also, a reminder, no show next week. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye. Ooh, got that one done with. That was a long show, wasn't it? A couple things. I didn't talk about this in the main show, but I went to the Nintendo Company store this week. It was kind of cool. I got invited over. A friend of mine knows somebody who works there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I went to the Nintendo Company store and picked up some couple of games and so forth. So that was cool. Let's see what else. Oh, the MVPs. So the Microsoft MVPs, you've heard me talk about them frequently on my show. They're going up against the Bungie crew in the Bungie Hump Day Challenge. So I was talking to Frankie earlier or last week and asked him if there's anything I can do. And he was very clear that there could be no ringers. So MVP guys, no ringers. Remember that. I'm sure we'll have a full report on that next week. Also, in case I didn't mention it during the main show, there is no show next week. The reason I say it so many times is that you know there's going to be people posting on my blog next week that, when's the show available? What time can we expect it? Yeah, so that's why I'm empowering you, my faithful listeners, to educate the masses about what's going on. And as I said, I'll be traveling, doing some stuff. I'm actually going down to Southern California for a few days to visit some friends and just take a few days off, because the summer so far has been sucktastic up here in the Northwest. And hopefully I can go down to California and get a little bit of that SoCal action. Sunshine action, I mean. All right. So no show next week. Be a show in a couple weeks. I got a lot of work to do in the next couple weeks. Got to come up with how I'm going to top this show. And I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for downloading the show. We're still working on the blog. I know a lot of people have asked for the ignore feature. Lithion, who works on the blog, has been busy. He just imported all of the old posts. If you go and you can actually search. So I think somebody posted this on the blog. MajorNelson.com is now 100% backwards compatible, which is good news. Of course, the comments are still a little weird. The comments aren't quite matched, and he's still working on that. So we're still doing some tweaking on the blog. But the good news is we're stable. You guys haven't had any problems, have you? No? Good. All right. I'll talk to you guys in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.